Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 422. In this episode, Scott talks with David Starr about applying agile practices to manage your family life.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with David Starr, formerly of Microsoft, but now the COO of Scrum.org. So you are an expert in Scrum, aren't you?
I've been doing Scrum for quite a long time, Scott.
So that makes you a Scrum Master? I know that the people who are listening probably have heard of Scrum Master training and things like that.
Are we ever really masters of anything? I don't know. Scrum Master is a role within Scrum. And a lot of people associate that term with the whole idea of using Scrum. So I get it. Scrum Master is a thing out there.
So when I think of Scrum, originally I thought of, you know, a rugby Scrum, a coming together, a planning, and then a going, and then racing off. Can you tell me where that fits into the larger kind of agile software methodology?
Well, it's actually a really good metaphor for what Scrum asks us to do, which is everyone keep their eye on the ball, if you will, and we sort of support each other and work together as a group. And that's the whole idea behind those rugby scrums, right? We're focusing as a team on one small point to target all of our energy together. And that's sort of the metaphor idea behind Scrum, which doesn't stand for anything. A lot of people think it does. It doesn't. And it actually was borrowed from that move in rugby where everyone forms a scrum and focuses together. So in terms of where does it fit within the agile toolbox, there is the idea of iterative incremental development practices. Scrum is one of these, and it means that we make progress in a series of sprints, or, you know, we focus for a while, then we deliver, then we focus for a while, then we deliver, and we do that on a regular cadence. And that's a little bit different than what you find with alternative things like lean, Kanban systems, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So folks that have been listening for the last 2 minutes might think that this is going to be a show on Scrum as it relates to software, but the thing that you and I have in common is that we've got families with schedules and a lot of crazy things going on, and we're also focused on productivity in our personal lives. So this is not a show about Scrum, as it is a show about agile family practices and applying what we learn in managing projects to managing a family. How did you get this idea?
Well, I don't know about your personal life, but in mine, when I bring something home from the office, it's very rarely met with any sort of enthusiasm, right? If I were to walk into my wife's, into the living room and say, hey, I got this great idea from this management thing I learned at work today, that's pretty much a non-starter for the conversation. So that's where I tried to bring Scrum into our home many years ago. I learned Scrum originally back around 2003-04 when everyone else did. And had some successes at work and thought, you know, I saw such amazing changes in behavior with people I work with based on very little simple things that we do that I'd like to try some of this at home. So I brought it home and said, hey, honey, what do you think about these ideas? And she said, don't even try it. And instead, I tried it because as I'm sure you know, neither one of us can leave well enough alone, right?
Yeah, so pretty much.
Yeah. So while she was out one day, this is a great story. You should ask her sometime. While she was out one day, before she got home, I had gone ahead and taken some big drywall screws and screwed cork boards and whiteboards into the wall in the kitchen. And while that may have been a little disruptive to get things off and running, it worked really well over time. And now, actually, my wife's a huge advocate of some of these practices. And I'll tell you, we don't use Scrum. We don't use Lean. We don't use Kanban or any sort of formal thing. We just have borrowed from all of these practices into some things that we do in our home that really have made a difference for how my kids manage themselves and the expectations of being a good family member.
Okay. So paint the picture here. How old are the kids? How big of a family is this? Is this a Brady Bunch situation?
It's pretty large. Yeah. My wife and I have been married for 23 years at this point, and we've got four kids. Right now, the ages are 13, 14, 15, 16. So I have four teenagers.
Wow.
Which is, you know, its own barrel of or kettle of fish, if you will. And then
or barrel of monkeys.
Yeah, the barrel of monkeys. There you go. So when we started doing all of this, though, the children were much younger. This was about 10 years we've been doing this. So kids at that time were as young as, you know, 4 or 5. And we even had some kids that weren't reading well, and we tried different techniques for different ages. And so we've definitely evolved how we do this family practice together over the years. And putting the kids in charge of that evolution has been a really big thing. So I can tell you there have been some constants over the years that we hang our hats on as this is what we do. And those are pretty simple. Every week we have a family meeting and we look at what we did, that we sort of reflect on the last week. And then we give allowance, which is a completely unrelated thing, but it kind of breaks up the meeting. And then the second, or rather the third part, is we look ahead and plan out the next week. So life for us, because, you know, I work a regular 9-to-5er, kind of like you, and the kids go to school. Life for us happens in weekly increments or weekly sprints. And so we find that once a week, having that family meeting to reflect on how things are going, and then to plan the next week, is perfect timing for us.
Mm-hmm. When I think of Scrum in a company perspective, I think about it moving a single product forward. I feel like people kind of go off, they work on their user stories, they work on their features, right, their silos, but then they come back and they integrate. But with a family of teenagers, I would think that they would all have different goals and there would be no company goal.
I think you'll actually find that condition far more often than in development teams than we like to admit. That said, sure, I agree with you. This is not a product where, what is the product, I guess, is really your question here. And the product in our case is the family. So we're all part of this family. We have that in common. And, you know, the real life that happens is a result of how we steward that product forward. In other words, there are things that agile teams do that we want our family to do. We want to focus more on what's coming next than what's coming a long time from now, for example. Mm-hmm. Another example, we want to focus more on what is and use that in our decision making rather than what should be. You know, these are things that typical management techniques have known for years, and so we've just kind of borrowed them.
Mm-hmm. We, my wife and I talk a little bit in our relationship tips show. I had her on Hansel Minutes a number of times about having a family mission statement. We basically made it a marital mission statement, and ours was to you know, have a happy life with no drama. And you know, everyone's mission statement is going to be different. It might be getting all the kids through college, or it might be, you know, retiring quickly and traveling. Is that your product? Have you guys got a plan like that? Like, you've got teenagers, so it's like, you know, get all these kids into school.
Well, there's sort of our sardonic way of looking at it. One is, and that is for my wife and I, we want them alive at 25. You know, that's our big deal, is to make sure we have happy, healthy, productive members of society. And for us, while we haven't sat down to codify that into a mission statement, like I know a lot of families do, we've talked about it a great deal. And what we want is for our children to learn how to be self-sufficient and sustaining adults and members of society. That's our job, right? Mm-hmm. And everything we do is in light of that, to teach these folks how to begin to be people on their own and dealing with their own lives.
Okay, so if I want to implement agile practices or a Scrum within my my house, what do I have to do? There's the way of changing my brain, but then there's also thinking about what tools I might want to use.
Well, sure, tools are a part of it, and I think for my family, It's very simple. We just bought a new house. And one of the things that we had as part of our move-in for that new house is we had a painter come in and actually paint an entire wall of our kitchen as a magnetic whiteboard. Ooh. So that's our tool. And that'll be the tool in the new house going forward. We've always had some kind of board like that near our dining room table. And the reason we choose to put it near the table is because that's where we come together as a family. And so it's that information radiator thing that we've learned from agile practices that says, if I can see it, then we talk about it. And if we talk about it, then we do something about it. And so we try and keep information omnipresent as we get, when we get together naturally over dinner and stuff. And that's been very helpful. I think you could go a lot of different ways with applying practices like these. First of all, I don't think that work and home are the same. They're definitely not. Firstly, you can't fire anybody at home. That's not an option. No one gets voted off the island. And that turns out to be an incredibly big difference. Another big difference is that much of the work that we ask kids to do is often rote or repetitive and boring. Clean your room is simply not creative work, right? Mm-hmm. But then again, oftentimes neither is tweaking a server configuration setting so that, you know, performance goes up. But it's something that has to be done. So those are just little task sorts of things. And what we learned is that different kids respond to different artifacts or different tools for that rote work. Some kids really like a little card that they're going to move back and forth. Some kids really like a checklist. And it's important for us to give the kid whatever tool they're most comfortable with, but also to hold the kids accountable collectively for things getting done. So there are two types of work, that sort of chore work. That's where most people focus. They think about chores. How do I get my kid to do those things? So again, checklists there, but that's not really the secret sauce of this. You know, the ability to get everyone to focus and get their chores done is great, but how much better is it when we start doing things like asking the kids to peer review each other's work? That starts to change the dynamic a little bit, because a kid will come back and say, you know, I wiped the bathroom down, or I put the dishes away, or I cleaned the kitchen. And the response is, great, let me go check it, because I happen to know that this kid will often, you know, leave some work undone, that sort of thing. And so instead, what if I just have, what if I ask one of the other kids, hey, can you go check so-and-so's work? And that starts to build collective accountability. And little things like that, and borrowing from our management practices, have really helped the kids start to stand on their own a bit more. I think you know this, Scott, about my family. You and I have discussed this at one point. I have some kids on the autistic spectrum, and this practice of the weekly cadence and the dependable, or the fact that they can depend on a way for us to have a conversation about us has really made a big difference in their lives, because they now feel more in control and empowered in their own lives. So that's been really great.
Mm-hmm. So that reliability, that the idea that you can count on the weekly meeting, you can count on the strategy, you can count on the plan, and then execute on the plan.
Indeed, yeah. And, you know, it may sound extreme, but the first thing to consider is all we're really doing is we're putting things on the refrigerator like everybody's done, you know, for eons. Here's your chore list. That's the easy stuff. The next stuff is, what can we accomplish together as a family? Each week in our family, we choose to set a goal. And it might be, and it's just some sort of improvement goal that we as a family can undertake. And it's simple things. It's things like, we will endeavor this week to have better table manners. And so that's an opportunity for us to learn about what table manners really means. And we'll have that conversation throughout the week. And then in our weekly meeting, where we say, how did we do this week? We'll specifically visit that goal. How did we do on the goal this week of learning better table manners? And we'll talk about that. And sometimes we'll choose to try it for another week. And that has been a really nice tool for helping us improve together as a family, rather than focusing on individual accomplishments. Because while everybody has these things in their lives that they have to accomplish, like a history report is due, or I have to go to track practice, or I'm working towards some other goal in life, the thing that we have in common is us. And it's good, and effective for us to focus on improving us. So that's why I say the product is the family.
Mm-hmm. What is the product backlog then?
The product backlog is for us that set of chores, which, you know, that's the easy part again, but every day we have this expectation that a bucket of chores is going to be completed. And so that's done. But then we start looking at things beyond that. The goal that we just talked about, or something for us to work on this week, the weekly goal, that's a big part of what it means for us to focus together. So we have a backlog of potential weekly family goals. And we might choose two for a given week. But we also, in that backlog, have things that we have to accomplish together that are more non-deterministic. You could call it even more creative style work. So some things might be, we are going to volunteer this weekend at something, and we need to prepare for that. I mentioned that my family and I just bought a new house. Well, we have to move. And so that's a project. So we built a backlog, and it turns out that kids' rooms are smaller and have fewer things in them than a lot of the other rooms in the house. So we have to do this together. This is not something that just affects one person. So moving was a really good example, I think, of a shared project.
Where do you put this backlog? I mean, how far do you take it? I could see someone, you know, building, you know, using Scrum tools and building out a backlog. And is the backlog just post-its, like you said, or magnets on the fridge? Or do you use tools like Trello or different Kanban boards?
So I'm sure, like you, I have tried 4 years to get folks in my family, okay, particularly my wife, to work with me on systems like Trello or Asana, or it just doesn't work. She's a very analog person, and that's perfectly fine. So we do everything on a whiteboard, and we just have a list. That's all. It's not very complicated. But I will tell you that it has helped a lot for the kids to evolve what the form is of those tools over the years. So if a kid has an idea that if we're going to, that we'll do better if we use sticky notes instead of just making a list on the whiteboard, then let them do it. That means that they're engaged in the process. Invite them to change what we do. The only hard and fast tenets of what we do in our family is we're going to meet every week. We're going to have that shared family goal. We have baseline expectations of daily operations like chores, etc. But within those boundaries, feel free to innovate and help us evolve and innovate differently than the way we're doing business today. And the kids love that.
When companies have values and they have things that they kind of stand for, that's kind of the more, you know, woo-woo kind of philosophical stuff.
Sure.
How do you take things like that are, you know, philosophical is the word I keep coming back to, although I don't think it's the correct word. And how do you bring that into the daily goals and the larger goals?
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk about it a lot. That's one thing. And so what are some of those things? We talk about reflecting on the work we do and on how we do it. We actually talk about that at home, and I ask the kids, how did you do this week at school? What did you get done? And we have very focused conversations where we inspect and then make a plan or adapt for what are we going to do next. And then we try really hard, Scott. This is the one thing that I think eludes us even to this day, is trying to succeed or fail as a team. Now, it's easy enough to do that when you're looking at the family goal and something like table manners or, you know, taking care of the yard this week. It's easy enough to see there. But over time, the real truth is that we are all living different lives. And so group accountability for the family is sometimes a difficult thing to find. And we try, my wife and I, really hard to find ways to hold us accountable as a group. So that's something that we talk about a lot, and we have it on our whiteboard. We have it written out there. We succeed together. We reflect on our work and how we do it. Some other things that you might find at any given time on the big, you know, family headquarters board in our kitchen area is adapt all the time. I can change the process if I want. Those sorts of things that we put up there occasionally just to remind kids that they really are in a control seat on how we do our business.
Mm-hmm. Do when you say accountable, where does that fit into punishment? Like, there are things where, hey, I didn't clean my room and that's a bummer. And then there are larger, like, you were given this task and this was required for you to get this done and this didn't get done. And that is a huge problem.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that what works at work works because it works, not because you're at work, you know? And
you had that one ready to go, didn't you?
I did. I've been holding on to that.
Yeah.
it's one of my favorites. But that's really true, because we have found that, you know, the practices that work best in team environments work because we're all human, right? And so it turns out that a big part of accountability is simply transparency. If a kid commits to some action or behavior for a 24-hour period, and I shouldn't say a kid, by the way, because my kids do a good job of holding me accountable. So if I make a commitment that I am going to go to the gym in the next 24 hours, and then 24 hours from now, we get together in a quick little family huddle, which we haven't talked about. It's something we try to do on a fairly daily basis. And the kids will look at my little section of the board, and I've written that commitment down. Went to go to the gym. They'll say, Daddy, did you go to the gym? And if I didn't, then everybody in the family knows it. And the truth of the matter is that that's typically enough. It doesn't have to be punitive, because if it's punitive, then we're talking about extrinsic motivators. And the extrinsic motivators, you got to use them a lot of times, particularly when kids are in their teen years, you know, carrot and stick stuff.
Can we talk a little bit about that? Because I don't know if everyone understands that word.
Sure. Sorry. So if I'm intrinsically motivated to do something, it's just part of who I am and my core. I am intrinsically motivated to, you know, be a good dad, to be a software professional, things like that. External motivations are things that give me a reward for a given behavior. Nobody's going to pay me to sit down and watch, you know, or learn a new technology necessarily. And so that is something I do for my own intrinsic motivation. But if I have to learn technology that I don't like, because that's what it's going to take to get my job done, my extrinsic motivator there is, hey, man, I'm going to lose my paycheck if I don't learn how to do this thing, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. Mm-hmm. So intrinsic, extrinsic simply means, am I motivated from internally, or is there something external to me that's sort of holding my nose to the grindstone?
I see.
And it turns out that you're going to get far better performance from internally or intrinsically motivated people. And that's the secret sauce in all of this, whether you're at work or whether you're at home, is finding a way to intrinsically or help with intrinsic motivation in people. And man, Scott, it's so much harder in kids than adults, but that really is our job, right? As parents, is to try and help them want to improve and help them improve because they see the importance of it in life. And I think that that's made a great transition from the workspace into our house.
Yeah. My kids are a little younger. Of course, my kids are 6 and 8, but we've been really working on this idea of intrinsic motivation. Like, you know, do this because it's the right thing to do. My wife has started using our last name. Like, you know, we do this because we're Hanselman, like this sense of family pride, which is funny because like it wasn't her original last name, but she's really like taken that as a call to arms. And because what's happening is they're getting to the age now where they're noticing other kids doing stuff that's not cool, right? And we're trying to nip that whole, but so-and-so does it, you know, thing in the bud. And by trying to get them some sense of family pride or, you know, whether it be family pride or cultural pride or Oregonians or, you know, whatever we can use to get.
We're a tribe, man. It's we're a tribe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, look, it's like you want them to think about the greater good and you want them to think about the world, but they're 6 and 8, right? You know, their priorities are pretty minimal. Like right now, if they can get the next great action figure, that is going to be enough motivation for them. So we can't get them thinking about the greater good when they really don't know what's outside their neighborhood, but we can get them thinking about you know, this is not okay because it's not okay with me, even though it might be okay for other people. It's funny. They're really concerned about smoking right now. None of us smoke. No one we know smokes, but, they know it's bad. So the 6-year-old was walking at the mall and we saw someone who's smoking outside and we passed him and he goes, "That guy is smoking." Because, you know, like a guy heard him and the mall heard him and it's just like, oh, well, that, and so then it's like, well, how do you explain to them that personal, you know, you have personal freedom, even though we choose not to do it. So you don't want to be judgmental, but at the same time, you got to keep the eye on the prize.
I totally get that. Yeah. And I think that summarizes exactly our challenge as parents is helping our kids understand that we do a lot of things we do just because it's the right thing to do. And yeah, that's the whole nut of intrinsic motivation. I agree.
Yep, absolutely. I've tried to get my wife using Trello for some of these things, but she has decided that it is not intuitive. So that's about as far as I've gotten with that. I like the idea of formalizing a family meeting. We do have dinner together every night, which is useful. And we also use driving in the car as a time to check. She calls it checking in. It's like, all right, everybody, let's just check in. So that's our scrum. Mm-hmm. It's basically, you know, every other day, whenever we find ourselves in the car for more than 10 or 20 minutes. Is yours a formal, like, it's time for the family meeting?
We actually do similar things now, and that's an experimentation that we've been doing. So it has been far more formal over the years. And recently we've had just a lot of turmoil because as our kids have gotten older, they're all into various activities, sports, plays after school, that sort of thing. And so like you, we've always tried very hard to have dinner together as a family. That's a tenet in our life. And we use that time now to, as you said, sort of check in, but visit the activities of the week or the commitments that we've made for the week. And so that's why we put those information radiators or that board with all of our information on it near the dinner table so that we can have that conversation really easily as we sit there and have a relaxing meal together.
I'm going to take you off into a direction though, because you just said something that you have a lot of great information, but sometimes guests have words or phrases or acronyms that they throw out because that's part of their life, but the rest of us don't get them. You just said information radiators. That's a great term.
Yeah, it's good. It's a term that we also borrow from the Agile community, and it is simply the notion that if I put something large and visible in a shared space where we can all see it, and that thing changes to show different information under different circumstances, we will pay attention to it. And if we begin to pay attention to it, we will then change our behavior to game that thing, which might be as simple as the continuous integration build lava lamp that goes on when my build fails. That's a perfect
I have the thing called the Siren of Shame. You can buy this now. So an information radiator, would that be like my wife and I recently got Fitbits that is radiating information, telling me that I am not being, you know, physically active enough?
I don't think so, actually. I think that's more of a sensor. I think if what you did is you hooked that sensor into some system that, you know, put a large screen TV on your living room wall and everybody could see what Scott was walking that day or your step count thus far today. Now you're talking about radiating information to, you know, the ether in our home or in our office. And now everybody sees that and we might choose to behave differently because of that information. So when you think about scrum teams, they have those boards, right, that they put on the wall. Mm-hmm. And often you'll see columns like to do, doing, done. Those are information radiators.
I see. So the idea is that it has to be, everyone has to see it. It has to be an organizational value, and everyone sees it, and everyone can kind of imply either they can give their judgment in the sense of like you didn't get that project done. I can see the burn down, but at the same time offer help. Like, oh, I can see that you're having trouble with the build failing, and I can come in with collective ownership and assist on that.
Indeed, that's exactly right. And it's funny you bring up information radiators. You keyed on that because it's a big part of why I started getting into this agile conversation in the first place. I was at an organization where we were shipping 300 known defects in our flagship software. And over the course of 18 months, we got to zero known shipping defects. The way we did that is that I wired up a lava lamp, because I happen to like lava lamps, apparently, to our bug tracking system. And anytime we started every sprint, we would start our sprint with the light on, and you had to fix bugs until the light went off, and then you could build new features. Mm-hmm. And I simply would lower the tolerance of defects a little bit every week. And that information radiator let everyone know that it was either time to fix bugs or time to work on new features. And it changed everything about our team dynamic. And it all stemmed from that and seeing the power of such a simple concept.
Interesting. So just the it wasn't in your, I'm trying to say, it wasn't in your face in the sense of it wasn't a mandate. There we go. This is not a mandate to change behavior. It's a gentle nudge in a direction by simply presenting information in a way and then allowing people to make their own judgments and then change their behavior.
Because it turns out that if you have well-meaning, engaged folks and they see that information in front of them, they'll do something about it.
Very, very cool. Have you written some of this up about applying Agile practices to the family, or can people look at your website and learn more about this on your blog?
So this has been a bizarre thing, because what started as something of a, I mean, it's just something we do in my family. It's never really been big drama. And I published an IEEE paper about this mm-hmm. in 2009, and it received some interesting attention. I received a call one day from a man named Bruce Feiler, who turns out to be a New York Times author, and some folks on the show, or some listeners I'm sure have heard of him. He came and ended up visiting my home. He stayed with my family for a week and sort of watched our activities. And we're the first chapter in his book called The Secrets of Happy Families. It's all about how we do this stuff. And that created even more interest in this thing that the stars were doing. So I started getting email from all over the world, people asking little questions about it. And accordingly, I said, you know, I need to take a little time, put this into some kind of course or something that people can approach and get it out there. And that way I can go back to my real job. And so I happen to be a Pluralsight author, and they were interested enough to let me do this. I built a course called, I think it's Agile for Families on Pluralsight.com. If you go to familyvnext.com, you'll get there.
Family VNext, like version next?
That's correct.
That is a great URL. Family V next. Oh, and it redirects right to the Pluralsight. So if you have a Pluralsight subscription, you can get a trial and you can check that out up there. Agile Families, Techniques for Living with Change. Looks like it's about a 3-hour course, and it's a 5-star course. Very cool. And actually, if you do have a Pluralsight, you can also take a look at my stuff on getting involved in tech. So good opportunity to sign up for a free Pluralsight trial today, hey?
Indeed. I was really excited because my wife chose to do this with me. And so this is not for geeks. Geeks, I think, are particularly enamored of things like this. But this was done in such a way that would help you, Scott, convince your wife that we're not crazy. I brought my wife into the course. She plays an active part in it. And she's actually gone out and done some talks is definitely an advocate for these sorts of things.
That is very cool. I had an article in my blog recently, and I referred to the gender non-specific non-technical spouse. Right, and I haven't got a shorter word for it, but this is just that person in your life who is your partner but is not technical. And
we call them neurotypicals around the Star House.
Neurotypicals. Nice.
Those are people who are afraid of keyboards.
Normies.
Right, normies.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, David Starr, for chatting with me today.
It's been lovely. Thanks, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.